Veda. By the four Vedas. Sama, Yajur, Rig, and Atharva. Pranihitaha. Prescribed. Dharma. Religious principles. He. Indeed. Adharma. Irreligious principles. Tat viparyayaha. The opposite of that. That which is not supported by Vedic injunctions. Vedaha. The Vedas, books of knowledge. Narayanaha. Sakshat. Directly the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Being the words of Narayana. Svayambhu. Self-born, self-sufficient. Appearing only from the breath of Narayana. And not being learned, not being learned from anyone else. Iti, thus, Sushruma, we have heard. So translation, the Yamadutas replied, that which is prescribed in the Vedas constitutes dharma, the religious principles, and the opposite of that is irreligion. The Vedas are directly the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Narayan, and are self-born. This we have heard from Yamaraj. So you can repeat. The Yamadutas replied, that which is prescribed in the Vedas, constitutes dharma, the religious principles, and the opposite of that is irreligion. The Vedas are directly the Supreme Personality of Godhead Narayana, and are self-born. This we have heard from Yamaraj. So purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada, Shivalpada Ki Jai. The servants of Yamaraj replied quite properly. They did not manufacture principles of religion or irreligion. Instead, they explained what they heard from the authority Yamaraj. Mahajana Yena Vatasa Pantaha. One should follow the Mahajana, the authorized person. Yamaraj is one of the 12 authorities. Therefore, the servants of Yamaraj, the Yamadutas, replied with perfect clarity when they said, Shushruma, we have heard. The members of modern civilization manufacture defective religious principles through speculative concoction. This is not dharma. They do not know what is dharma and what is adharma. Therefore, as stated in the beginning of Srimad Bhagavatam, dharma prajita, koitavotra dharma, not supported by the Vedas, is rejected from Srimad Bhagavatam, Bhagavat dharma. Bhagavat dharma comprises only that which is given by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Bhagavat dharma is sarvadharman prachyaja, mam ekam sharanam praja. One must accept the authority of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and surrender to Him. And whatever he says, that is dharma. Arjuna, for example, thinking that violence was a dharma, was declining to fight. But Krishna urged him to fight. Arjuna abided by the orders of Krishna. And therefore he is actually a dharmi, because the order of Krishna is dharma. Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, in the 15th chapter, text 15, Vedais cha savar, ahameva vedyaha. The real purpose of Veda knowledge is to know me. One who knows Krishna perfectly is liberated. As Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita in the 4th chapter, text 9, Janma karma cha me divyam. Evam yo veti tatvataha chaktva deham punarjanma naiti mam eti sorjana. One who knows the transcendental nature of my appearance and activities does not, upon leaving the body, take his birth again in this material world, but attains my eternal abode, O Arjuna. One who understands Krishna and abides by his order is a candidate for returning home back to Godhead. It may be concluded that dharma, religion, refers to that which is ordered in the Vedas, and adharma, religion, irreligion, refers to that which is not supported in the Vedas. Dharma is not actually manufactured by Narayan. As stated in the Vedas, Ashamato Bhutasya Nishvasitam Mitad Yad Rigveda Iti. The injunctions of Dharma emanate from the breathing of Narayana, the supreme living entity. Narayana exists eternally and breathes eternally. And therefore, Dharma, the injunctions of Narayana, also exist eternally. Srila Madhvacharya, the original Acharya for those who belong to the Madhva Gaudiya Sampradaya, says, Vedanam patamo vakta harireva yato vibahu ato vishvamaka veda ityahur veda vadadaha. The transcendental words of the Vedas emanated from the mouth of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Therefore, the Vedic principles should be understood to be Vaishnava principles because Vishnu is the origin of the Vedas. The Vedas contain nothing besides the instructions of Vishnu, and one who follows the Vedic principles is a Vaishnava. The Vaishnava is not a member of a manufactured community of this material world. A Vaishnava is a real knower of the Vedas, as confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita, Vedais Charsavair Ahameva Vedyaha. So, Yamadu ta uchahu veda panihito dharma yadharmas ta vibharyaya vedo narayana sokshad swayambur iti shushuma. So, omagada timirandasha gananjana shlakaya chakshur unmeritam yena tasmai shigurveda maha. So, of course, this is something we constantly preach to people in terms of another branch of philosophy, which is called epistemology. There's many different branches of philosophy. Yesterday we talked a little bit about teleology in class. Teleology means the study of purposes. And there's other branches like metaphysics, and ontology, what is the nature of a thing? And, you know, if you want to impress people when you're preaching, you can use any of these ology words with people, like ontology, epistemology. So epistemology basically means, how do you know what you know? And, of course, this is the first topic dealt with in the Isopanishad, which is one of the first books I read through the Prabhupada, where Prabhupada proves, using the Vedic statements, that what we think we know is probably not valid, because we have these four defects. You know, we have imperfect senses, you know, the whole list, they're imperfect senses, you know, tendency to cheat, tendency to be illusion, and what was the last one? What's that?
Make mistakes,
yeah. So we have these four, like, basic materialistic tendencies. Therefore, whatever we think we know may not be true. So Prabhupada said, using the example of someone who taught himself to play the piano, it's very hard to teach someone to play the piano when someone has taught himself to play the piano because he thinks he knows how to play the piano. So first you got to unteach, or somehow or other convince the person that he doesn't know how to play the piano, and he has to realize it, and then you can actually start afresh. So it's better to actually have someone who never touched a piano before if you're a piano teacher. So it's the same thing with knowledge, that people who think they know something, they know less than people who know that they don't know. And of course, this is something that's in reference to Socrates. Socrates, of course, was a citizen of Athens, Greece. And there were many sophists there in Athens, Greece. Sophist means basically the people we call lawyers today, or professional philologists, or people who argue for a living, you know, debaters. I say debaters, more than lawyers. And these sophists would take different positions. Like lawyers, if you go to law school, you're actually taught to take different positions in the same case. Regardless of whether the person is guilty or innocent, you actually have to take different positions as part of the training. So these sophists thought that they knew something, and they thought they were very intelligent. Whereas Socrates, he knew that he didn't know anything, which is interesting. And therefore there was this fortune teller called the Oracle of Delphi. If any of you remember your history, Greek history. And this oracle, anyway, there's so many stories if you read Greek mythology about the Oracle of Delphi. Sometimes it's described as three people with one eyeball between them. You remember that? Anyway, it's interesting. Anyway, this Oracle of Delphi was asked, because the oracle could somehow or other connect with the supernatural realm. Like, who is the most intelligent person in Athens? And the answer was, Socrates is. He's the most intelligent person because he knows that he doesn't know. Which is interesting. And therefore, you can, if you read the works of Plato, because actually Socrates didn't write anything down personally, but Plato was his disciple, and Plato utilized Socrates as a character in his dialogues. These are called the Socratic dialogues. And in these Socratic dialogues, Socrates is basically using what's called the maieutic method to try to ascertain what is true and what is not true. I mean, like, they talk about things like heroism, what is a hero, what is bravery, and stuff like that. And he sort of challenges the people who are coming up with different answers and shows how that their particular answer is not valid based on different argumentative techniques, such as argumentum ad absurdum, which means if you show, when someone makes a philosophical point, if you take it to the logical conclusion, it's actually absurd. So anyway, so therefore he was considered the most intelligent, and actually Prabhupada even said that he was on the Brahman platform. Not that he was a Hare Krishna devotee. There's no record of him with japa beads and dancing and chanting. But there's one interesting dialogue, it's called the Phaedo, which details his last moments on the earth, in which he is taking hemlock. Hemlock is sort of a poison. So he's taking this poison to die, because he was condemned to death, and he was very heroic. He was actually given the opportunity to leave Athens or die. And he was so, like, determined for the truth. I mean, this is a really important point, too. So determined to actually always speak the truth and not be a coward running away from the truth. He said, I prefer to die rather than run away. And so what happened is that he was given this hemlock to drink, and he said basically that these people who are condemned to death, they cannot catch me. Maybe they can kill the body. I'm just paraphrasing. But they cannot catch me because I'm a soul. Wow. You know, Prabhupada said that's Brahman realization. Of course, I don't advocate devotees like drinking hemlock to display their Brahman realization. That's really not bona fide. But the whole point, an epistemological point, is that he understood, basically, he understood he wasn't the body, but he understood that he didn't know anything, and he was opened to different sources of knowledge. So the Prophet said that's one of the first things we have to do when we're preaching to people, is to convince them they don't know anything. And actually, it was that one statement, I think it was by Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, we have to take a straw in our teeth and basically, you know, bow down to people's feet and say, Mr. So-and-so, you're so wise, but basically you don't know anything. And then this way, we can teach them about Krishna consciousness. So our method of receiving knowledge is called the descending process rather than the ascending process. Generally, in practically every religious philosophy that we find in the modern world, the theologians or the monks or whoever have used the ascending process to derive their theology. Theology means the study of God. Theos, ology. You know, you got all these ology words. Ology, theos, ology. The study of God. That is the nature of God, the nature of the soul. These are all aspects of theology. The relationship of the living entity with God. Very important, the creation. These are theological issues. And so most of the times they're deriving their theology from their ripe imaginations. You know, I think, like Prabhupada would often use, say that if you're saying, I think, then you're foolish. I think it must be this way. I mean, in ordinary affairs, we can do that. You know, like if you're driving a car and you say, I think it's on the right-hand corner. That doesn't mean you're a fool. But dealing with spiritual, what's called siddhanta, if you use this expression, I think, you know, I think Krishna is God. I think that I am eternal spirit soul. Then you're foolish. Like you hear the way Prabhupada speaks. He speaks with such conviction because of his faith in the Vedic literatures and faith in the spiritual masters. Of course, there's that one verse in the Bhagavatam. Yasya devi para bhakti yata devi para gurup tashayate gatitariyata prakashate mahatmana. That if one has that implicit means unquestioning faith, in the words of the spiritual master and the words of the Vedic literature, then everything is revealed to him. So you hear that with Prabhupada. I mean, this faith is actually an extremely important, I would say it's the most important thing in advancing in Krishna consciousness, because if you do have faith, of course, we're going to describe in a second what faith means, then you act properly. Because that's Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami's definition of faith. Shraddhasrabde Visha Sakahe Sudridhanishya. His definition of faith is that simply believing in something, a sublime something, that if I do that, everything will be accomplished. Whereas in the Western world, our definition of faith is a little bit different, at least the implicit definition of faith. Like people say, you know, I believe in Jesus, but they don't really believe that what Jesus said is should be done. You know, they don't believe statements like it's difficult for a rich man to go to heaven as the camel go for an eye through an eye of a needle, or you know, they don't believe that. They don't believe, you know, Jesus said, "Surrender unto me." Yeah, but they believe in Jesus. They believe in the existence of Jesus, but that's not really faith. I mean, I can believe in the existence of so many people, but that doesn't mean I have faith in them. Like I say, Kardama Muni, I believe you exist, but I have no faith in you. You understand? Like Kardama Muni may say, you know, Maharaj Gurudev, you should do this. I'm not going to do that. That means I have no faith, but I believe in you. See the difference? You can believe. So another example I typically use in that regard is the criminal believes in the government, but he doesn't have faith that simply by following the laws of the government, then he can be happy. His faith is the opposite, actually. Simply by disobeying the laws of the government, then he can accomplish what he wants to accomplish. So he has, you know, lack of faith. And of course, Krishna in the Gita says, Shraddhana purusha dharma shasha parantapa, Aprapyamam nivartante mrityu samsara vartmani. That's a very interesting verse in the ninth chapter of the Gita. He says, Shraddhana purusha, those persons who don't have that faith. Dharma shasha, this dharma again. Dharma, of course, let's define that word. That means the inseparable quality, the eternal quality of the God, devotional service, the living entity. That's what dharma is. If one doesn't have faith, dharma shasha parantapa, and actually it's interesting, he addresses Arjuna as a mighty armed one. So Krishna's using a little psychology there. You see, whenever Krishna refers to Arjuna using a particular nomenclature, it's a very psychological dynamic there, that Krishna is actually trying to get Arjuna to do the right thing. And therefore, he addresses like sometimes conqueror over wealth, conqueror of wealth, conqueror over sleep, gudakesha, and parantapa, a mighty armed one. You know, so one who doesn't have that faith, a mighty armed one, parantapa, aprapyamam nivartante, he cannot achieve Krishna, but he returns to mrityu samsara vartmani, the path of repeated mrityu samsara, about death, continual death, samsara, the cycle of death. Literally, mrityu samsara. Samsara means cycle, and mrityu means death, the cycle of repeated death in this material world, or the path of repeated death in this material world. So faith is very important. So getting back to the point of this, I mean, this is all part of the point of this particular verse and purport, that where should we repose our faith? And the reason I'm asking that question is because we hear the word Veda often. Of course, the word Veda means knowledge, and the word Vedanta means the conclusion of knowledge. You know, Siddhanta means the perfect conclusion of knowledge. So the problem with the Vedas, of course, the Vedas are perfect. They emanate from the breathing Narayan. But our problem in dealing with the Vedas is that, as Krishna says in the Gita, Trigunya Vishaya Veda Nis Trigunya Bhavarjana Nirjan Vol Nityasatvasto Nir Yoga Kshema Atmavan. He says mainly these Vedas are for people in Maya, which is interesting. That doesn't mean the Vedas are not good or not dealing with Dharma, but they're dealing with injunctions for people who are in different varieties of Maya. Just like you have this Baskin-Robbins ice cream, which comes in so many varieties. So Maya comes in, basically there's three different varieties, but there's multiple, unlimited permutations of these three modes of nature. Goodness, passion, and ignorance. So, as they say, different shlokas for different folks. So there's different injunctions. I mean, it's really not, you know, if you simply approach the Vedas, you're never going to understand the purpose of the Vedas or even what to do. I mean, it's really interesting. Even in ISKCON recently, we have people going into the Vedas and pulling all these mantras out and things like that. And I'm just wondering how applicable they are. I mean, I was just sitting in Mayapur, and devotees, after Mangal Arati, they recited the Shikshashika. But then before the recitation of the Shikshashika, they chanted Hari Om. Now that's, of course, you know, that's Vedic mantras like Hari Om. But whether it belongs in front of the Shikshashika or not is another question. And I asked some experts and they said it doesn't belong in front of the Shikshashika. So there's that problem. Vedeshu Durlabham. That's very difficult. This is, of course, from the Brahma Samhita. Vedeshu Durlabham Adurlabham Atma Bhakta, which is the key right there. That Krishna cannot be known simply if you approach the Vedas. Of course, there's another verse which Prabhupada quotes part of that verse in the purport. It's from the Mahabharata in discussion between Yudhisthira Maharaj and Dharmaraj. And this is Tarko Pratishta Shudina Navina. That one cannot understand the absolute truth by argumentation, which we've already covered, but even by studying the Shrutis. Because the Shrutis are Navina, it means they're multi-branched. I mean, there's many. Shruti refers, of course, to the original four Vedas. I mean, when we talk about the Shrutis, that's the original four Vedas. Sometimes the Upanishads are included there, but basically those are the original. Shruti means that which is heard. That which is heard and repeated exactly. And then the Smriti, that means which is remembered. So then there's Itihasa, Shruti Smriti, Purananam, Itihasa, which is the histories, and then you have the Puranas. Puranas are also histories, but arranged in a certain way, dealing with cosmic creation, you know, secondary creation, and all these other different subject matters that make them a Purana. So, in any case, simply by studying the Vedas, or even taking Vedic injunctions, you're really not going to know what to do. The topmost authority, according to Yudhisthira Maharaj, is Mahajaniyena Gata Sampanta, which is what Prabhupada actually quotes here. And of course, this is also brought out in the last line of the verse. Aswayambhur iti Shushruma. Thus I have heard. Thus we have heard. So, so the ultimate way to understand the absolute truth is, as Prabhupada would say in a colloquial way, to follow the path chalked out by the Mahajanas, which is really interesting. Mahajana yena gata, the panta. Panta means path. So one should follow the path chalked out by the Mahajanas, of course. Then you may say, which Mahajana? Then you get more difficulty. So, because there's the Dvadasa Mahajanas, and of course, it's not that that's exclusive, they're the only Mahajanas, but of course Prabhupada is a great Mahajana. And so, one should follow the path given by the founder Acharya. This is the point I'm coming to. Given by his divine grace Srila Prabhupada. I mean, if one's a member of the ISKCON movement. I mean, if one's not a member of the ISKCON movement, then I guess you may have your own founder Acharya. If you're a member of the Sri Sampradaya, you know, and you're a follower of Sripad Ramanujacharya, that's okay. But the whole point is the founder Acharya. You understand? Like we find in all the Sampradayas, there's founder Acharyas. There's the original, as we mentioned in some Sunday feast several months ago, there's the prehistoric founder Acharyas, which are Lakshmi and Lord Brahma and the Komaras and Lord Shiva. And then there's the modern-day founder Acharyas. Of course, modern means several hundred or thousand years ago, like we have Madhvacharya and Ramanujacharya and Nimbarkacharya, etc. And then we have our particular Acharya for our branch of the Sampradaya. And we follow Prabhupada's example and Prabhupada's teachings. Prabhupada knows what part of the Vedas are applicable for us. I mean, even there's parts of the Bhagavatam that are not applicable. It mentions in the Bhagavatam the Brahmacharya should wear deer skin. And we don't really want our Brahmacharyas wearing deer skin. Right? In the Christian West especially, they wear pants and t-shirts. We'll have to make pants and t-shirts out of deer skin. Then they would look like Davy Crockett or something like that. Coonskin cat, you know, a cap with a little tail behind it. So, and then, you know, so Prabhupada gave us, and Prabhupada also mentioned, as far as the Hari Bhakti Vilas, which we accept, that there's certain parts of it that are not applicable for us. I mean, we eat carrots, for example. And, you know, devotees go to India sometimes and then you run into members of the Gaudiya Math and they criticize you for eating carrots. Of course, I mean, technically speaking, the carrots that are mentioned in the Hari Bhakti Vilas are a completely different breed than the carrots we have nowadays. So even following that injunction strictly, you could still eat carrots. The modern carrots, good old American carrots. So, but Prabhupada said certain injunctions are applicable, certain ones are not. And the whole point is, Prabhupada understood or understands the purpose of the Vedas, which is basically to surrender to Krishna, as Prabhupada mentions here in the purport, and ultimately to always think of Krishna and to never forget Krishna. These are the two injunctions that it represent the ultimate essence of the Vedas. And so the Acharya, he can adjust the secondary injunctions to help people come to the point of always remembering Krishna. That's really the point. Because if you're just remembering injunctions at the time of death, then you're not going to go back to Godhead. But if you're remembering Krishna, yam yam vapi smaran bhavam yasate yanti kalevaram tam tam evaiti kontiya siddhatad bhava bhavata. You know, whatever you're thinking of, you're going to go back to Godhead. And you're going to go to that particular location. So the whole point is to adjust things so you can remember Krishna. And Prabhupada has given us this process. And some people think, well, I need a second opinion. This is actually an interesting dynamic. Some people think, well, I need to accept some instruction from someone who's not in the line of Prabhupada. And not to criticize that instruction, but it actually keeps you from surrendering to Krishna. Because to surrender to Krishna, your line of authority has to be pretty much intact. It's like going to a doctor. Of course, we don't want to surrender to doctors. But, you ask for a second opinion. Doctor says, well, I think you need cataract surgery. And you say, well, let me go for a second opinion. And you pick the doctor that agrees with you. Then where's the surrender? Of course, surrender to the doctor. I mean, obviously, I'm not advocating surrendering to the doctor. But I am advocating surrendering to Krishna. Surrendering to Krishna means to surrender to his representative. That's what it means. I mean, you can't get out of it. To understand Krishna, to understand knowledge, the Veda, means to surrender or approach Krishna's representative. And so it can't be a picking and choosing thing like that. It has to be really one-pointed, especially for the members of the Krishna Conscious Movement. Then, that is our method for receiving knowledge. So any questions or comments? We have about 1 minute left for class. We touched upon quite a few topics. Yes. You like the sliding scale? Faith, well, that's an interesting point. Faith is increased by pachaksha bhagamam dharmam shishikam kardamagya, by our experience. When we follow Krishna consciousness, some people say to me, come to me and they say, well, Krishna consciousness is not working for me. And then I say, are you following? And then I go over their life and I find they're not actually following. That's why it's not working. It's like anything else. It's like when I was young, sometimes I would put together electronic devices with solder and everything. And when I finished and there were a few resistors left. Resistors means parts of it. And it didn't work. Because I just obviously didn't, I was so intelligent I didn't follow the directions. That's a man thing. When you get something to put together in a store, you don't follow, read the directions. You put it together first and you read the directions later. Has anyone ever experienced that? I mean, the men do things like that. And then you look at all these, boy, there's screws. They must give me extra screws and different things for this particular thing. But it's not they gave you extra screws. It's that you didn't read the directions, you rascal. So if you follow Krishna consciousness, it works. But there's injunctions what to do, what not to do. We have the 10 offenses. That's the things not to do. And then we have things to do, the chanting, rising early in the morning. It works. And then faith increases. And then also faith increases by observing people who are following or have followed the process. Observing someone like Prabhupada, reading his books, coming in contact. When you hear from Prabhupada the transcendental sound vibration, Bhavanti Vritkarna Rasayana Katacha, Joshinad Ashu Apavarga Bhartmani. There's that Shraddhavrit Tirbhakti Nukrumeshati. That's Lord Kapiladeva's instruction. He says by hearing from the proper source, then from the ear to the heart it goes. And then the first thing you get is Shraddha. And then after that you get Ratya or taste. And after that, bhakti or devotion, true devotion actually begins to manifest. Okay. Anyway. A little philosophical.